Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome along to the RTE GAA podcast. Mikey Stafford here filling in for Jackie Hurley one more time. She's actually fine, she could be working today, but after Wexford actually won a game of hurling, I insisted that I was presenting today's podcast.
Fair play.
And I was insisting Ursula was going to be on with me. So hello to Ursula Jacob and Peter Brannigan and of course Rory O'Neill. Everybody well?
Good, Mike.
All good.
Pretty good.
Very good.
And just full disclosure, Peter Brannigan actually lives in Wexford and is was lucky enough to find a Wexford woman for himself. So, Rory, you're basically outnumbered here.
It was a star-studded lineup in Walsh Park yesterday. I don't think they picked it up on TG Cahir, but Jonathan Rhys-Meyers was in the crowd. Did you see that cutaway?
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers lives in Wexford now.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, they cut away to him at one stage. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd say probably poor old Micheál O'Donnell. Probably I wouldn't have a clue who he was. And I was going, oh, look, maybe it was the fact that Killian was picking up the gong last night that he said, I need to up my street cred here on a hurling context. No,
he's been living in Wexford for a while now, as far as I know. It's like, you know, you haven't had a successful wedding unless Jonathan Rhys-Meyers has turned up at it or something. I don't know. It's happened a few times from what I've heard. Obviously, yes, we're talking about Wexford and Waterford. We will talk about the other games for a bit, but Ursula, after the weekend, Limerick, Clare and Wexford are the only three unbeaten teams in the National League. And I think we'd have to say they're the three favourites for the All-Ireland. Is that fair enough, Ursula?
Without a shadow of a doubt. But in all honesty, I was down at the Wexford-Waterford game yesterday and I was on radio commentary with John Milan, and there was a real championship feel to the game yesterday. You know, there was a lot at stake for both teams, and both teams were craving that win. You know, Wexford obviously had got the three draws, but they really wanted to kick on and get a win. And I suppose the most important thing for both teams was they were trying to secure the Division 1A status. And Wexford, you know, deservedly have done that now. I think at the start, you know, they would have been disappointed. It was very slow starting for Wexford. Waterford came out the traps that bit easier. And they seemed to be getting their scores that little bit easier in the first half in particular. From a Wexford point of view at halftime, I said to Milan, I was like, I'm happy enough we're only 3 points down, because I felt Waterford had done a lot more of the hurling than Wexford. And, you know, Conor Hearn's goal, and what a powerful run it was by Conor Hearn in the first half. It was nearly a replica of how Jack O'Connor broke through the Waterford defence the week before. So I was a little bit surprised that they allowed it to happen again. But Conor is very, you know, athletic, very physical. He ploughed through. He finished it brilliantly. And that gave Wexford a lifeline when maybe they were struggling to get the scores on the board. And again, I suppose Waterford, Davey said it afterwards, he would have been very disappointed with the second half as a whole. Again, the third quarter, I think they only scored 3 points. And Wexford took control and they dictated the game. The couple of really key switches that Keith made on the Wexford side, Shane Reck tagged Jamie Barron everywhere he went in the second half. Jamie had got 3 points from playing the first half and he was so industrious. He was so involved in the play himself. Caleb Lyons and Jack Prendergast were really, really influential up front. But Shane Reck, for me, was the difference in the second half because he curbed the influence of Barron around the middle of the field. The second switch that Wexford made, Simon Dunhu picked up Caleb Lyons. Probably Caleb was given too much time and space on the ball in the first half, but I felt Simon really came into the game strong and even ended up scoring 1-1 in the second half. So those few little switches that Wexford made, I think, paid off in the end. And then look at the fearless performance out of Keane Byrne, corner forward. Like, I've watched him the last couple of years with the under-20s. He got 5 points from play yesterday. You know, Pete is rightly rewarding him now for those performances. And I think he's playing mature beyond his years. For such a young guy, he's taken responsibility, he's taken ownership, and he's not afraid to win the dirty ball. And he got 5 super points from play yesterday again, set up a couple of scores and won a few frees. So at the moment, it's looking very positive for Wexford. We seem to be having that little bit more strength and depth, which is maybe what we were missing in the last couple of years. And then Pete, you know, is bringing a great buzz to the setup. The players are expressing themselves and they're playing with that kind of freedom. And it's really a joy to watch at the moment with how, you know, and confidence is growing and momentum is growing. So from a Wexford point of view, it's very, very positive.
Yeah. And Peter, they kind of, I think after the draw with Offaly, people were probably looking at Wexford as, well, they're 1B bound, and Waterford did quite well against Cork, but now it's, you know, Wexford are joining Cork and Clare and Galway and Limerick and Tipperary and Clare in Division 1A next year. So they're, lest I say it, they're going to be the little fish in the big pond next year, but that's definitely what they would have wanted as opposed to ending up in 1B.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I think the fact that they've gone unbeaten, whatever about the Walsh Cup, you know, if you bring it into the league and you're beating teams, and I suppose the big thing from a Wexford and from a Dublin perspective is trying to beat teams in Munster and do well against teams in Munster. And the fact that they're doing it this spring, Wexford, is very, very impressive. I was watching it yesterday, and after 15 minutes, I kind of had this fear of the old failings of Wexford, which was Waterford came strong at them, got their 5 or 6 points, and Wexford started missing opportunities. And I was thinking, you know, it could be a long afternoon. But in fairness, they just knuckled down and they just started to work themselves into the game. And they were very, very impressive. And that period then in the second half, I think it was between around the 45th minute up to the hour mark where they absolutely blitzed Waterford. It was the winning of the game for them. They looked really, really sharp. And that was a Wexford team, as Ursula touched on, without the likes of, you know, Lee Chin, obviously, Rory O'Connor, Conor Mack, Dee O'Keefe. So there's plenty of strong players.
Liam McGovern is back training, I think.
Yeah, precisely. So there's strength to come into that team. And I mean, what more can you ask? We're unbeaten in the league so far. They go into the final weekend. Okay, you know, Kilkenny are playing Waterford, and if Kilkenny win that game, it's likely they might miss out on a semi-final spot, but they still have a chance against Cork to get into a semi-final. So that's huge progress from Wexford, considering, you know, it's only, what, 9 months from the whole Westmeath debacle and the, you know, the last day and having to stay in the Leinster Championship and all the rest of it. So, yeah, very, very impressive so far, to my mind, this spring.
Yeah, and Cork, the Cork game, Peter mentioned it there, Roy, the Cork game is a chance to beat another Munster team because it's an glaring issue for Wexford over the last few years is that, you know, they hold their own in Leinster, you know, they lose to Westmeath, but then they can't seem to lose to Kilkenny these days. But then they haven't been able to muster much of a fight against the Munster teams, which is, I know Waterford aren't at their peak, and I know they're not probably among the top three teams in Munster at the moment, or Waterford aren't among the top three teams in Munster, but it's still very encouraging, as again, and considering the number of absentees that Wexford have.
I think they'll give Cork absolutely plenty of it. I think there'll be a massive crowd in Wexford Park next weekend. I think it doesn't take much for the Wexford supporters to rally in behind. I think they have... They have a massive following. I think they always bring incredible colour. They always bring a brilliant buzz when the team is going well. And I think you'll probably see that next weekend in Wexford Park, and rightly so. I think they're playing with incredible spirit. I think there's... even though I got the prediction wrong, I did say last week that there's so much to admire with what's going on with Rossiter and the Wexford Hurlers at the minute. There's no whinging or moaning. There's no excuses. Even if you look at the start of the game yesterday, Mikey, like they went 5-0 down. They were 9-4 down at another stage. There was no panic. There was no meltdowns. I mean, we've seen in the past, not too distant past, certainly last year, where they took ferocious trimmings from Clare on their own patch, and things didn't obviously go well in the Leinster Championship afterwards. There's a steel, there's a resolve. This is a different Wexford proposition under Keith Rossiter. I think the players coming back there'll be no guarantees they'll get straight into the team. Ursula mentioned Conor Hearn. I thought he gave an unbelievable display all the way through. He's a fantastic player. Like, I mean, what a find there to be going in midfield. The only boo-boo, I suppose, or blot on the copybook was they conceded a bad goal, which was a little bit... I'm messing in the full back line, but these things can happen in the modern game where everybody is playing
happened
much to
Limerick.
Yeah, it's a short, like everyone's playing a shorter game these days. So like there is the odd time that you're going to get caught out. That'd be the only thing that you'd say to yourself, look, that was potentially the only major blot in the copybook. But other than that, I mean, they're unbeaten. They've played some top quality sides, and I think they could beat Cork next weekend because I think they will give Cork problems that Cork really don't like.
Mm. Perhaps. Or so word on Waterford, like Davey said afterwards, we lost our shape. And they like things were coming to them so easily in the first half. There was points flying over from everywhere. Caelum Lyons couldn't miss, Jamie Barron couldn't miss. And it was like, well, you know, they were making Hurling look easy. And a lot of that, And Mikey Kiely was, honestly, I think I tweeted it. Mikey Kiely looks like he's gained about 7.5 stone over the winter. So like the monstrous man. When he went off, they kept hurling the ball in there like he was there. Like it was, there was no full forward line for stages of the second half. And Waterford were continuing to play ball into a non-existent full forward line, or they were hitting aimless wides. And they just, as Dave said, he said they lost their shape, but they seemed to completely lose the run of themselves and forget what had got them into the position they were in at halftime.
Yeah, and I suppose maybe when the pressure gets on at times, decision-making, it this improves. But their efficiency in front of the goal, you know, let them down again. But I know myself being an inside forward, like, I would be beyond frustrated if I was playing in the full forward line with Waterford, because they're shooting at times, you know, from and taking the wrong option. But the guys inside are the danger men, but they're not getting the ball in nice and quick into them. And, you know, when Padraig Fitzgerald came on, like, he looked dangerous. You know, when Desi Hutchison came on, he looks dangerous. You know, his footwork, everything. He's well capable of scoring brilliant points and goals. But they're taking the wrong option. I don't know, is it that they're so rigid with their system that they want to go through the short passes through the lines, that they're not getting the ball in quick enough to the guys, and it allows then the opposition, whether it's Wexford or whoever else, to get the players back. And, you know, the likes of Damien Reck, who's going to be there as a sweeper, is able to pick up the ball then in front of the danger area. But for me yesterday, Waterford took the wrong option too many times in the second half. Michael Kiely, without a doubt, was a huge blow when he went off, because he was causing havoc in the first half. You know, his ability to win the ball in the air, you know, he won a couple of frees. He was brilliant at laying off the ball to the runners on either side. I've no problem if they do the running game and the short passes, but it's knowing when to get the ball in direct and quick into the guys who are making the moves, who are making the runs, because the slower the ball is coming into those guys, the more frustrated they're getting, firstly, but it also allows the opposition the time to get the players back. And the second half, I fully agree with David, they did lose their shape. And again, I mentioned Conor Hearn's goal. Like, if they're meant to have a sweeper, extra players back in defence, how was Conor Hearn allowed to just nearly breeze through the heart of their defence again? So, like, there's question marks there. Obviously, they're missing key players. But look, you know, the worry is now the 5 or 6 weeks to the first round of the championship, and the likes of Tadhg De Bárke, Conor Prunty, these guys are going to be lacking, you know, that game time. So what way are they going to be set up then coming into the first round of the championship? And that will be a worry, because it's not just as easy as coming into a game at championship pace and being ready then, because at that stage, there'll be no excuses. No one will accept that they were missing or they were injured or whatever. When championship comes, you need to be ready. So for me, the next 6 weeks for Waterford are probably going to be the most important 6 weeks this year for them.
Yeah, and then just finally on this, and Ursula, just to ask you, you say be ready for 6 weeks for championship. Peter listed some of them, but being a Wexford fan who's used to them having maybe 17, 18 players that you'd risk in a championship match in Croke Park, this is the full list of who has to come back. So how's roster going to do this? Conor McDonald, Lee Chin, Liam Ryan, Conor Devitt, Jack O'Connor, Roy O'Connor, Liam McGovern, Dee O'Keefe, Conal Flood and Oisín Foley. They're all the players Wexford are missing at the moment. I didn't think Wexford could field a team if you took all those lads out. So the fact that, you know, these under-20s coming through, it's encouraging. But it's a headache as well for first-year manager.
I'm not sure all of them go straight back into the team, Mikey.
No, you couldn't see them all going in, Ursula, anyway. Some of those guys wouldn't actually be complete front-liners, but they're still the lads who played championship last year.
Yeah, without a doubt, loads of experience in that group of players that you mentioned. And as Rory said, you know, will all of them get back into the starting 15? At this present moment, no, they wouldn't, because Keith and the management team are rewarding the guys that are taking the opportunity now. And that's what I actually really like about it, that he's rewarding the guys week in, week out, giving them the chance and exposing them to this kind of level of hurling, because the transition from playing under 20 to senior is not that easy. You know, you can't just, it doesn't automatically just happen. It's a huge step up. But the more games that these guys get against senior inter-county teams, the better it will be for them. And it'll toughen them up. It'll make them more physical. It'll give them that kind of hunger and desire then to want to continue to play. But look, I think it's a positive headache for Keith. and the management team, because I would have said in the last couple of years, maybe we didn't have the same amount of options as other teams on the bench. So look, it's a positive at the moment, but he will be looking to get some of those key men back in the next few weeks because they will be needed in the Leinster Championship.
Okay. And if you'd like to hear myself and Ursula talk about the Wexford hurling team for an additional hour, just hit the red button and you'll get that there. But we better move on. Peter, Saturday
night.
The
game of the weekend. Sorry, Mikey. It was the best game of the whole
weekend.
Oh,
yeah. That's why I led with it, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, the other games aren't getting the same level of treatment, let's be honest.
Mikey, Saturday I night. Just noticed one other thing. We're wearing the purple and gold too.
Oh, we are actually, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah, you got my text then. Saturday night, Peter, down in Super Valley Park in Cleveland, we had their quote unquote home game against Tipperary. And it went the same way as all 13 games that Tipperary have faced against John Kiley's Limerick. Our friend Colin Keyes from Irish Independent tweeted this, that in those 13 games, Tipperary have won the first half by 26 points on aggregate, and they've lost the second half by 74. Limerick just come strong in the second half, and Tipperary, like a lot of teams, just don't have an answer for it. So while we can admit that this was definitely springtime shadow boxing, those three goals put a gloss on it for Tipperary. This was a comfortable enough win for Limerick, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I suppose when a team is in the year that they're potentially in, this historic year, this 5-in-a-row year, they're just in a sort of a flow. I remember it with the Dublin Footballers. You know, the team just have this unbelievable confidence, it seems, that they can just kind of go through the gears. And you were mentioning earlier on, obviously, Wexford and Clare, the only other two unbeaten teams. But like, it's not like they're sort of waiting to hit peak once the Munster Hurling Championship comes around. They just seem to be in good form, and they've put out B teams, they've put out C teams in some of the games, maybe to some extent, you know, third string teams, and they're still playing so well. So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, I suppose Ursula, you played in All-Ireland winning teams. There's probably this psychological hold that a team like that has over everyone else. It doesn't matter who you are playing against them. You know, you must be a couple of points down nearly going onto the field. But yeah, like Limerick, incredibly impressive. And yeah, I don't know if there's anyone at the moment who's going to stop them heading into the summer in 6 weeks' time.
Yeah, there is definitely still a slackness in Limerick, which is the scary thing, Rory. Poor old Michael Deignan got struck by the commentator's curse on Saturday night. He was listing off the subs that had come in and strengthened the Limerick team. Seamus Flanagan, Graham Mulcahy, Tom Morrissey. And literally the second he said Tom Morrissey's name, Tom Morrissey tried to hit this loopy hand pass that was cut out, and it went, and that led to Tipperary's third goal. I just imagine John Kiley has probably, you know, locked Tom Morrissey away in a dungeon and made him think about that for the next 6 weeks. But this wasn't Championship Limerick by any means, Rory, was it?
No, but I think what they were trying to do was, again, test a few things. Now, I've heard some people mention that they didn't think that Cathal O'Neill particularly worked well at centre back. I thought he was outstanding. I thought he had an incredible game, and in what is still, let's be honest, largely the most pivotal position on the field, insofar as it kind of defines what you're doing on your own puck out as well as the opposition, and in terms of locking down your defense, generally speaking. It might necessarily be your most skillful player, but it's by and large your best player. And I personally thought it did work. And I think if Declan Hannan needed an able replacement, or potentially if Kyle Hayes wasn't available, I think you have a ready-made option there to go in and into that half back line for me. A couple of other things I think that they were trying out. They were a little bit lackadaisical. Like, it was an eerie feel to the whole event, to the whole event. The venue, there was a lack of support. The North Stand was the only one that was open. It was a small,
it's like a Cork crowd, football match, was it?
Which, yeah, it was a pity. You know, like, the weather probably didn't help either. So I suppose, look, it kind of started, I felt, that a little bit like challenge match pace. Now, it built as the game went on. And for the most part, it was classic Limerick in that, you know, when they really needed to up it. And you mentioned as well about Tom Morrissey getting the hook. Like, Aaron Galan went for a shot from a goal from about 35 metres. Now, it was a good save, but obviously you'd expect your goalkeeper to save from that distance. But he got the hook pretty soon after that. So it'll give you, I wouldn't be surprised if that's another little thing. Listen, you know, in that situation, don't be trying any Hollywood stuff. Just bang it over the bar or look for the simple ball inside. But when they get everybody back, when they have everybody up and running, like, I don't, look, Limerick are, they'll just grind you out, grind you down. The work rate of their forwards, I mean, the work rate their forwards put in terms of hooks, blocks, tackles, body hits, chasing back, I think it's a real example for all the other teams to follow. And I think it's really the template that other teams need to try and replicate if they want to have any hope of beating them. I suppose, look, the couple of big things from a Tipperary perspective were the form of Garrod O'Connor. I think that line ball into Jason Ford for the first goal, I think he meant it, which was an incredible piece of skill, because I think he did spot him. It'll give you an indication. I think he played well in patches. I think the big negative, I suppose, is that injury to Seamus Kennedy, which did look very, very serious, the way he went down. When you see a player go down as dramatically like that and not move at all, that's usually a sign that we're in pretty serious pain. So you just hope from their point of view, because he's such an integral part to their half back line and obviously can play in a number of different positions. But yeah, look, I think it was probably a more than a 1 point game in the end. The goal that Bonner got at the back end probably put a bit of a glass on the scoreline. Limerick were
that was a great
more.
Goal.
Brilliant yeah. goal, you know, and like what a servant. Speak, and it's like Bonner Maher's on the go since I think 2010 at this stage. Like, I mean, that's a longevity now in an intercounty career. And another person that deserves a shout out, which Ger Canning had a great stat on, was Graham Mulcahy, 71 National League games in hurling. Again, incredible contribution as an intercounty career. So, yeah, look, it was a sort of a classic league game in winter hurling, played in wintry conditions. I don't think either team will be. They'll just all park it and move on. The hilarious thing is, if Limerick are beaten by Galway next weekend, they won't make a semi-final, having been unbeaten up to now. So, but that just adds a little bit of intrigue to next weekend, something that we hopefully can look forward to.
Yeah. Ursula, as Roy says, like there's lads who put their hands up. And you're wondering how many spots in the starting 15 they're auditioning for, because I think it was Rory here on Thursday that John Kiely, you know, it's like the Dublin O'Byrne Cup team of the good old days when, like, you know, these lads got their chance and they weren't seen again until the next year's O'Byrne Cup. But the one guy who I think has to have a serious shout of starting in their championship team is Donico Dalig. He's just a Limerick forward.
One in the 54th minute, Mikey. He put one over his shoulder in the 54th minute. It was outrageous.
It was an outrageous
point.
Well, I would make the point, Ursula, that if you're going to wear a red helmet and matching red boots, you have to be able to do stuff like that.
In fairness to him, you know, he has so far, you know, another 3 points there on Saturday evening. And as Rory said, that one in the second half was just incredible. But he's added another kind of element, another dimension to the attack. And he looks very comfortable there with the likes of Galan and Keane Lynch and Hegarty all around him. He kind of has slotted in at his ease. So, it'll be interesting. Will he make the starting 15 come championship? Obviously, he's growing in confidence every game. But having those guys around him is such a strength as well, because they're hitting such intelligent ball into him. Like, we haven't probably even mentioned Keane Lynch and like his influence as usual. But like for his first start of the year, I think he just orchestrated everything. He was so industrious. He got 2 points himself. He won a number of frees. He set up a number of points. Like, you know, the conundrum there again, do you sit back? Do you give him the space? Do you get right up on top of him? Tip definitely gave him too much space on Saturday evening. And that's why he ended up being so influential. But yeah, O'Dalig, going back to that, 3 super points. Even Fergal O'Connor, cornerback, you know, he had another solid game. Colin Coughlin came into the game, especially in the second half. So like the options are there. That is one of the key things.
Mikey, so we have Donico O'Dalig and Dermot O'Dooley. Now, if we want to put the two of them together, do you remember Tongue Twister on Bosco?
Yeah.
Get that 10 times fast.
Yeah.
Commentator's curse.
Yeah, when you do think about all those players that were missing, they almost have similar level of squad strength as Wexford, I would say. They're close anyway. let's move on to the match between the other probable semi-finalists, which was Clare and Kilkenny below in Ennis, which... Peter, Eddie Brennan's right to say about how hurling, and I think it's particular to this time of year with the heavy pitches and stuff, but it's tantamount to wrestling at times. This match was a bit like that. The physical confrontations below in Ennis were incredible, and it was only occasionally, I think, a game of hurling kind of broke out.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, we watched it in base yesterday, and I mean, it was, as you say, it wasn't the most attractive game. It was a game that there was a little bit of shadow boxing, I felt, going on the whole way through it. And even at the end, Clare got two really quick fire scores, brilliant scores, and then Kilkenny still had the opportunity to take something out of it, which, although we didn't mention it earlier on, Waterford also had a chance to do against Wexford. But, you know, the games were tight right down to the end, and there goes my microphone. And, Kilkenny's perspective, they're, you know, I think it makes more sense for Kilkenny, Galway, Wexford to try and get to a semi-final because of the way the Leinster Championship is kind of set up. Kilkenny have a soft enough start in Leinster in that sense. Like, Dublin have Wexford in the first game, or Wexford have Dublin, whatever your perspective on it is. Whereas the other guys have kind of softer games. So Kilkenny, it would make sense for them to try and get to a semi-final, and they have Waterford this weekend. But I don't think there's too much concern. There were strong words from Kilkenny management afterwards about players, you know, if they can't put their hand up now, they mightn't be around in the summertime, which I suppose is a message to the players ahead of the next couple of games. But Kilkenny were still thereabouts, even though they got beaten. And, you know, on another day, and as you say, on maybe a drier pitch, a harder surface, they probably would have got a goal right at the end of that game and, you know, forced a draw, or maybe even gone on to win the game. So, you know, it wasn't a great game of hurling from the point of view of the aesthetics of it, I suppose, but it was still intriguing. Instead intriguing, and it was still close going down the final stretch, which is, I guess, all you can really ask for at this stage of the year, unlike some of the other games that were played yesterday.
Yeah, that's not to say there wasn't some good stuff to appreciate in it, Rory, and I think the Clare half forward line in particular, Peter Duggan, David Searle, and Reedy, like when you consider again the players that have to come back into this Clare team, it's a familiar tale for everybody really this time of the year. But Clare's forwards are much vaunted, and I do think their half forward line is worth a mention. But they did withstand a Kilkenny onslaught there in the last couple of minutes. And how many times have we seen Kilkenny, only last year against Galway, how often have we seen Kilkenny score that goal, that sucker punch in the last couple of minutes? Clare defended with their lives, which is impressive to see at this time of year.
Yeah, very impressive. And definitely a team. Look, I think they'll be in the semi-final. You know, they could go and win a league this year. Think there's it, as a game, I thought it was pretty honest, but it was very ragged. There was a lot of hand-to-hand stuff. I think people are giving out about refereeing. I would not count against that one bit. I think intercounty hurling now is becoming largely lawless. I think what you're actually allowed to get away with becomes very, very difficult for a referee to adjudicate on. One person's strong arm tackle is another person's elbow to the head, is another person's play on and let the game flow. So, like, you know, I think hurling has kind of backed itself into a corner by and large around this let the game flow merchants. And then at the same time, expecting referees to kind of try and become arbiters on and clearly very loosely defined tackle where effectively everything is on the table. You can more or less get away with everything. I mean, bar grievous bodily harm, it's not a free. And even then, you might still have situations where they waive play on. So I'd probably hold fire on being anyway hypercritical of referees. But yesterday was, I mean, it had the flavors of championship, 11 points at halftime for Clare, 7 different scores, a good spread. Brilliant to see TJ back for Kilkenny. Love the all blue kit for Clare. Really nice, you know, a bit of bit of swagger in that. They struggled big time on their own puck out. I think that's a lesson for them ahead of Limerick, facing into Limerick. They didn't go short very long. Everything went long. Rory Hayes off with an ankle injury. I think that's a small worry. He's one of the best cornerbacks around. So both centre backs, you know, John Conlon was outstanding for Clare. Kilkenny probably still have an issue there. You know, look, I think it's actually reassuring in some ways, despite all the progress and change within hurling, that centre back is still your anchor. And look, eight minutes for the first score of any kind of second half, which was very unusual, but it just kind of showed how much of an arm wrestle it was. And I think ultimately for Clare to come out on the right side of that, I think they'll be sitting pretty this morning, albeit a little bit sore at the same time.
Ursula, you must allow yourself a wry smile when you hear people complaining that, you know, kind of, you know, hurling's gone, you know, lawless, and, you know, can we define the tackle? It's something Camogie players have had to deal with for a long time. Coming from a different base, obviously. So, but I would be interested, because The Galway Dublin game is another one, and they got a bit out of hand in terms of
they thought they were still playing Super 11s over in
Johnny Murphy he refereed things differently, and he threw out four red cards, which is very unusual. And now I think this is a real league issue. This is something we'll discuss now, and it'll be completely forgotten by the middle of April. But Eddie Brendan's writing about it in the Irish Independent today as well. You know, hurling's a hard game to referee. Lads are getting bigger, they're getting stronger, they're getting faster, and what constitutes a tackle and what constitutes what we used to call a ruck, or, you know, remember, you know, like, it is difficult, and a different referee will have a different approach. And some games, especially on a heavier pitch, like, they're not really spectacles, are they?
Yeah, and I think, look, and I'm being honest, I think we've had this conversation at this time of year, the last how many years? Because the way games are refereed in February, March, April are probably a lot different from how they're refereed in May, June and July. And yesterday, yeah, I think it was, I was wondering, was it a record number of red cards in a game with how many were being thrown out? But look, I know, I can see, you know, I can see why people, spectators are getting frustrated watching it, because, you know, sometimes it's open to interpretation. What's a red card, a yellow card, a black card? There's so many cards now at this stage, you know, we have to have the rule book out. But yeah, like Conor Whelan, it was pure and utter frustration, you know, and it was very uncharacteristic like of him. You don't see him, you know, pulling a wild swing like that. You know, Ronan Hayes, when he got sent off, you know, like Dublin were, I think they were level at that stage. And that was a bit of a sucker punch to Dublin, because they were kind of coming back into the game. And that was a huge blow to him. Dahi Burke, you know, going into next week's game against Limerick, like without now Dahi Burke and Conor Whelan, like they're two of your main leaders on a team. And playing Limerick now at home, effectively a league quarterfinal next week, and you're missing two of your key players, you know, that would be a disappointment for Henry Shefflin. But Henry, you know, look, he's, what, tried out 30 players in the league so far. Some of the big guys came back yesterday, Concannon and Cathal Mannion, Joseph Cooney, you know, back as well. So he needs to get those guys back on the pitch. I think from a positive point of view for Galway, having Conor Cooney back to that kind of rich vein of form is a huge plus. You know, he's continued his good run from St. Thomas's. So you need Conor Cooney, you know, on point for Galway. I think he can be a huge threat when he's on his game. Probably has lacked a little bit of inconsistency the last couple of years. But yesterday he kind of put his hand up and was one of the main players. And what a pass to Conor Whelan for the goal.
Oh, like, amazing.
That was incredible, like, and that's what Conor Cooney can bring to Galway. But it's just getting it out of him on a consistent level.
Yeah.
Mikey, just one last thing there, just around the whole area of rules. Like, what people sometimes tend to forget is the game was largely a ground game for maybe 100 of the 140 years since the rule book was first put in place, we'll say. But over the last 30 to 40 years, it has completely moved to an aerial game. So the ball used, you know, so the contest was, you know, on the deck. Mm. Now the contest is obviously up around the midriff area, because that's where the ball spends most of its time. But the rule book hasn't kept pace with that. And that's probably where a lot of this is starting to fall down. And I know we've seen a football review committee come on board in a football context, but I think there should be a hurling one as well, just to keep an eye on things. Just see, does it need a tweak here? Does it
it's
need
also
a
become
there?
A possession-based game, whereas
exactly
before, you know, hurling was get the ball as far away from your own goal as possible.
You never saw fellas hand pass. You never saw fellas hand pass three hand passes in a row. One hand pass, two hand passes, three hand passes. You never saw that. That's a very, very new phenomenon. So the game has changed, but the rule book hasn't kept pace. And I think that's something. I mean, look, you've got Brian Cody, Liam Sheedy, you've got Donal O'Cusack, you've got all, like, you know, good hurling people out there that are not involved in inter-county setups anymore. In a similar vein to the football, why doesn't, you know, Jarlett get on the phone and say, look, are you interested in coming on board and seeing what can be done?
Yeah, getting Brian Cody involved in the hurling review committee would be a fair way to make sure there would be no rule changes whatsoever. Abolish whistles would be Brian Cody's only suggestion. Peter, Henry Shefflin, I think, probably needs to not settle on a team, but like he's used over 30 players in the league this stage, which he did last year as well. He loves, Henry Shefflin likes to experiment during the league, and
he gives great chances, yeah.
Yeah, you wonder whether, as you say, they kind of got a soft start to the championship, so maybe it's no harm. He can settle on his team as he goes. Dublin have no such concerns, unfortunately. They're through retirement, injury, whatever, like they've been stripped back a lot. And I know you're a passionate Dublin hurling fan. It's been a trying spring, but there was green shoots there yesterday. Is that fair to say?
Well, I suppose there's been a lot of questions asked of the Dublin hurling team, you know, over the last maybe month or thereabouts. Neil McManus on this pod a few weeks ago wondered already whether Micheál Donoghue had brought the team as far as he could. I mean, he's only at the start of year two of his reign. Ryan O'Dwyer had some fantastic quotes in, I think it was the Mirror during the week, sort of saying you could bring Brian Cody and Liam Sheedy and Anthony Daly into the management team and it still wouldn't matter because Dublin just don't have the players at the moment. Look, they gave 50 minutes of decent hurling yesterday, but we were chatting about this before we started. There's a trajectory with the Dublin team since sort of the start of the second half of that Galway game in the championship last year. They pushed 12 ahead, then they needed a late free from Donal Burke to get a draw in that game. And then they played Clare and they were absolutely annihilated. And now they've come into the spring and they were so lucky to get anything out of the game in Antrim. You know, a mistake from the goalkeeper and Dublin get a goal and win by a point. And in the other games, they've like the Limerick game, okay. As we said earlier on, I don't know who's going to beat Limerick this year, but like they didn't even get close yesterday. They did well for a while, but then when push came to shove, I think Galway scored something like 9 or 10 points in a row, or you know, 9 or 10 points to 1 point. And you just wonder who is going to come up and deliver a performance from Dublin from that area when the game is in the melting pot. You know, and it wasn't, you know, it was still, there was big names in that Dublin team. It wasn't kind of like a second string Dublin team by any stretch. Like you look at the team, there's, you know, Paddy Smith, Crummy, Brian Hayes, Ronan Hayes, Donal Burke, Danny Sutcliffe-Keenan. So these are all players that are going to be playing in championship. So it's worrying. The only thing is, look, we've 6 weeks to the Wexford game now, and sort of it's one of these weird anomalies. We have a good record against Galway in championship, and we have a very good record against Wexford. We only lost once since 2009. So that's a game to target for Dublin, and it's the game that if they win, well then the narrative around the whole team changes. But I mean, based on just purely on what we've seen, and league is league and all the rest of it, they don't have a chance of winning that game. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really know how you explain the final 15 or 20 minutes for Dublin yesterday. When you get to that point, when I think it was 114 apiece, they'd been ahead a couple of times at that stage, and then all of a sudden it just collapsed. They can't buy a score. They got the last score of the game, and that was it. But kind of very, very frustrating, and it's hard to know where they're going. And yeah, I think it's probably fundamental at this stage. The underage success, they're still competitive at minor, but it doesn't seem to be getting to 20s level, and then it just doesn't seem to be getting to senior level at all. So yeah, I don't know where they're at.
No, it's always been the puzzle, isn't it? That, you know, ever since the colleges have become strong in Dublin, that, you know, kind of this conveyor belt that people talk about with the Gaelic footballers doesn't seem to quite work the same way with the hurlers. And Rory, Dublin are one of those counties. There's many of them. I get Wexford and Waterford, and among them, you can't say the league is the league. The league is important for a team like Dublin because they can't go into the championship half baked.
Yeah, and I think, I suppose, look, dual counties, particularly Dublin, Cork, Galway, maybe to a lesser extent, because it seems to be a very geographical split in Galway. But in dual counties, what you will find is the better players are generally dual players as well, and they will pick the dominant code or the one that they have the best chance of success. And if you go back over the last 10 years, there's been some absolutely amazing hurlers come out of Dublin, but they're all wearing football jerseys. So I don't think Dublin should beat itself up too much about it either. I think the key is, and people will argue, look, there's enough players, there's enough clubs, there's enough population that they should be doing better. I think there is an awful lot of good work going on within the county. I think you just have to keep at it. You can't just, okay, look, the senior team are not performing at the minute. There are certainly green shoots yesterday, as you mentioned. They played really well for 50 minutes. The last 20, they completely collapsed. What is that down to? Mindset, fitness, resolve, backbone, leadership, probably a mix of all of those. That's a pretty difficult puzzle to fix. But I suppose from their point of view now is they're going to be playing Division Two hurling next year. Don't necessarily think that'll be a particularly bad thing for them. And it'll give them a launch pad to sort of maybe park the couple of real bad trimmings that they got, get a little bit of confidence back. And I suppose everything now just needs to go into a focus on the championship.
Yeah. Finally, then, a quick mention, Ursula, because it was a trimming to end all trimmings, and for Offaly against Cork, 5:28 to 16 points. Cork look very good again, Ursula. They there's a touch of Jekyll and Hyde to them, but sure, if a Cork team can't be flat track bullies, what's even the point of a Cork team, Rory? I would say, but Alan Connolly and Dara Fitzgibbon, they were highlighted last night on League Sunday, two serious plus points in that forward line. Connolly doesn't seem like the most finessed of hurlers, shall we say, but he's very, very effective.
Yeah, and I think he might be an option going forward, because, you know, one criticism that many people would give Cork is maybe they don't go direct enough at times, and he's a huge focal point in that full forward line, because he's a huge physical presence. You know, he's able to make himself big. He's very hard to stop when he's in possession. And he got three good goals yesterday. Obviously, he's going to come up against stiffer competition, and it'll be a really intriguing battle next weekend. I think if Connolly is named in the full forward line, if he's marking Conor Foley for Wexford, like, what a battle that'll be between those two guys, because the two of them, you know, are playing pretty good. But yeah, I think Cork, yes, today, obviously, when Cork are good, they're excellent, and when they're poor, they can be really bad. No doubt about it, they've got a huge talent, so many options. But for me, it's finding, you know, does Pat Ryan know his best 15 players at the moment? You know, that's the question I pose. I think he's got so many options, so many players, but I don't know, does he have the right fit yet? And that will be a worry for me, that I don't know, does he have a completely settled team at the moment? And come championship, you know, you need to have that little bit of a settled team. If you were to ask John Kiely in the morning, he'd probably know 13, 14 of his players. Pat Ryan at this stage probably doesn't know his best 15 players that can play together in the right manner. So I think that's the challenge for Cork now, between now and championship, is finding their best 15 and the best 15 that gel best together. Because you need the mix of, you know, the flair of Jack O'Connor and the physical presence of an Alan Connolly. You know, you can't have all the same like-minded players. You need the better balance. And I think that's what Cork are missing at the moment.
Yeah. It does, Rory, seem to be a bit of a theme for, I think, I mentioned about Henry Sheff and Galway. Like, you know, experimentation is good, but at some point, I suppose, you have to get results from those experiments and kind of have a clear idea. And Cork, very unlikely to make it to a league semi-final here. So basically, the Wexford matches, they're, you know, barring challenge matches, which obviously are probably going to happen as well, it's their last competitive fixture in which to kind of try and get some clarity on that.
Yeah, and I think Ursula makes a really good point. I think it is a difficulty for Pat to try and figure out what's his best. I think he has an idea in a defensive capacity at this stage. I think he knows. I think the starting six forwards, I think, is probably more of a concern for him. Alan Connolly getting a hat-trick yesterday would be a big boost to his confidence, because, like, you have to bear in mind, along with Mark Coleman, who, by the way, shipped a ferocious bad injury last week in a training camp below in Kerry, potentially lost a couple of teeth and might necessarily make a backing now again this year, which is very cruel on the poor fella. But Alan Connolly and Mark Coleman, along with Mark Coleman, missed all of last year. So he was, that would have stunted his development. He's still very, very young. He's only 21. And I think there's a lot more to come from him. What he showed yesterday is his ability to sort of, he's got, you know, target man option, take a ball down, pick it up in a difficult position, turn onto his weaker side. All of those types of things, I think, bode well. The goals were dribblers and scrappy enough, but he's capable of the spectacular as well. So, like, I think he will start come championship as long as he remains fully fit, injury prone again. But yeah, it's like, look, the game itself was non-contact, non-competitive hurling, let's be honest. I think they'll just park it, move on, and pour a good bit into seeing if they can go down to Wexford Park, because they'll see that now as a real proper test, because as you mentioned, it's the last one they'll get before facing into championship.
Yeah, and then finally, Peter, just a word on Offaly. A 27-point trimming is never nice. Johnny Kelly was pretty, he's pretty phlegmatic about it. He's pretty philosophical, but I think most people, I hope it doesn't sound patronizing, I think most people are glad to see kind of Offaly back towards the top table. Obviously, there's still a Joe McDonagh Cup team, but, you know, I think Leinster hurling gets a bad rap in a lot of places, including on this podcast, sometimes depending on who the guests are. But I think, you know, Leinster hurling needs a strong Offaly. It's been a weird old decade with them kind of plummeting the way they did. Mm-hmm. So they're a young team. They're quite a slight team in some ways as well. And I think they were always concerned about that Cork match. So I don't think their season isn't toast because they lost at home to Cork by 27 points. It's about incremental progress for them, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love a bit of 90s nostalgia, Mikey. Love a bit of Oasis. So give me a bit of Offaly hurling there. No bother with that. But I think it's reflective of the difference between the top teams and everyone else. And, you know, Cork haven't been at the very top of the game in the last few seasons either. So it's kind of interesting to see how far away Offaly were at. And I know it's a discussion that goes on and will go on forevermore, but you want to bring like a county like Offaly that have shown in the past that they could do it up to that level. So even though it shouldn't define their season, as you say, they've McDonough to look forward to later on in the year, it's a big, big defeat to take. And like the Dublin one against Limerick by whatever it was, 18 points. They are big, big defeats for Leinster counties to be taking against Munster opposition. And it kind of doesn't bode well. And it brings us on to a discussion, which I know maybe it's not a discussion for today, but is the championship best served by a usually Dublin or Wexford playing in the All-Ireland Championship? Like, would the fourth team Munster be better than Dublin or Wexford? Is that how far Leinster hurling has slipped? And I mean, in any sport, you want the best teams to be playing at the competitive edge of the season. And I don't know if that's Dublin and Wexford, and it's not being pushed by Offaly and Westmeath and Kildare and the rest of them. So it's, you know, is organising the championship on those lines the best way of doing it? That's
we're going to the Swiss model. Is that what we're saying? We're going to the Swiss model, like the Champions League.
Like, look, I'm a Dublin fan. What purpose did Clare whooping Dublin by however many points it was last summer do? I know the previous season Wexford were leading Clare going down the home stretch and only lost by a small amount, so they gave a better representation. But if you look at the record for Leinster teams, and I know Offaly are not in the Leinster Ireland Championship this year, it's Carlow and it's Antrim, but you know, we've already broken that wall of provincial championships. Munster is such an important thing, and I you know, I don't want to start Rory off in the Munster hurling championship. You know how amazing it is.
But it is. Well, like 6 weeks of that, don't worry.
In terms of how you organise the championship, you want the best teams playing at the business end, and that's a question that we may I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but maybe if it continues like this for another 2, 3, 4 seasons, you'd be into a decade of, you know, Leinster County's getting beaten in All-Ireland quarterfinals, it'd be a serious question to look at. But
he's trying to bring us down, Ursula. He's trying to bring us down. When Wexford win the All-Ireland this year, that argument will be
just
moot.
No, I'd be delighted. I have my bunting bought already, Mikey, to hang up here in Wexford Town.
Okay, well, we've nicely bookended this podcast with delusional Wexford talk. That's all I asked for. Thank you to Ursula, thank you to Rory, thank you to Peter. Jackie will be back with Rory on Thursday to preview
busy weekend.
It's a very busy weekend. Paddy's weekend always is a busy one, so they'll be back to chat to you then. Good luck, goodbye.
There's the whistle, it's over.